Welcome back, everybody. Man, I could let that song play on and on. I'm Grateful Dead on a Thursday morning. Eyes of the World, a classic. Yeah, it's the Earl Ingram Show. I'm filling in for Earl today. I'm Stu Daniels. Thank you for tuning in. If you want to give us a call and get on the radio, feel free. The number is 844-967-2789. If you want to discuss anything that we've been talking about today, we've been touching on a number of subjects, trains, budgets, and Donald Trump. Just before the break, I was talking about Donald Trump's been telling people that he wants to take Michael Flynn and Jeffrey Clark back to the White House with him if he happens to win in 2024. I'm going to get to just a little bit more of this article from Rolling Stone, and then we'll move on to that information I was telling you about how so many people have been locked up, innocent people locked up behind bars. And that's interesting because earlier in this article, just before the break, we were talking about how Donald Trump wants to continue the Republican killing spree that he had going on when he was in the White House before. He wants to bring back capital punishment in a big way, including group executions and firing squads, guillotines. I can't believe that I'm even saying those things, but just a little bit more from the story in Rolling Stone. It says, Trump's enthusiasm for Jeffrey Clark comes in spite of his mounting legal troubles, which are directly related to his and Trump's schemes to subvert the democratic order. FBI agents searched Clark's home and seized his phone as part of Special Counsel Jack Smith's investigation into efforts to subvert the 2020 election. Michael Flynn, Trump's first national security advisor, played an outsized role in the Trump and other Republicans' attempts to overturn the 2020 election and stop the count of electoral votes on January 6th. The retired Army Lieutenant General was an early and loud voice calling for Trump to declare limited martial law and temporarily suspend the Constitution. That's right, temporarily suspend our rights. He lobbied the then president to do so in a tense Oval Office meeting alongside Sidney Powell. As Trump's legal options to overturn the election fizzled, Flynn supported the Stop the Steal movement and spoke at a rally for the group alongside Alex Jones and Ali Alexander the night before the insurrection in early 2021. More recently, Flynn has devoted his time to speaking at the Christian Nationalist Reawaken America Tour, which has hosted a range of MAGA luminaries who attempted to overturn or challenge the election results, like pillow magnate Mike Lindell and attorney Sidney Powell. Trump has continued to stay in touch with his former national security advisor since leaving office, calling into his Christian Nationalist prayer meetings, and even publicly hinted that there may be a job for him waiting in a future Trump administration. During a speech at a Republican gathering in Florida in April, Trump gave a shout-out to his former national security advisor who was in attendance. Flynn, he told the audience, is a friend of mine who went through hell and handled it like the brave man he is. It's only a year and a half, Trump said. Just stay healthy. Man. Can you imagine what it would be like to have Trump in the White House again? Kind of hard to imagine, hard to believe, especially with the recent poll numbers we've been seeing, with Joe Biden several points ahead of Donald Trump in recent polls that have come out this week. I think usually polls I've seen about 7 percentage points ahead. But we were talking about how innocent people have been put away over the years, obviously, by gung-ho prosecutors, police officers that want to look like they're solving the crime. And this is a piece from the New York Times. It says, since the Innocence Project was founded by two New York City lawyers in 1992, some 200 of its clients, people convicted of murder and other crimes, and sent to prison, often spending decades behind bars, have been exonerated with the help of DNA or other science-based evidence. Several dozen additional exonerations involved evidence other than DNA. Although the Innocence Project has pioneered this work, others have also labored to free people they believe were wrongly convicted, as Lisa Belkin, a former reporter for the New York Times and the author of the forthcoming book, Genealogy of a Murder, writes in a guest essay this week. They include the documentary filmmaker Errol Morris in the case of Randall Dale Adams, who is the subject of Morris's film, The Thin Blue Line, and had been sentenced to death in Texas for the murder of a police officer, and a Florida judge who left the bench to represent Leo Schofield, who has been imprisoned in Florida for the past 34 years for the murder of his wife and is the subject of the podcast Bone Valley, hosted by the Pulitzer Prize-winning author Gilbert King. In both cases, as Ms. Belkin writes, prosecutors continued to hold fast to their belief that the men were guilty, even though others later admitted to the crimes. Though many prosecutors in recent years have shown more willingness to reopen cases in the face of new evidence, others have remained intransigent. Prosecutions can go awry for many reasons, as the Innocence Project's founders, Barry Scheck and Peter Neufeld, explained in their book, Actual Innocence, written with Jim Dwyer, a great reporter and columnist for the New York Times, who died in 2020. Sometimes eyewitnesses make mistakes, they wrote. Snitches tell lies. Confessions are coerced or fabricated. Racism trumps the truth. Lab tests are rigged. Defense lawyers sleep. Prosecutors lie. End quote. What puzzled Ms. Belkin after years of covering the justice system as a reporter and author was how, even in the face of seemingly undeniable evidence, some prosecutors vociferously opposed efforts to free people they had convicted. She covered the Adams case in 1989 and listened recently to Bone Valley. Quote, the Schofield case was so like the Adams case that it was the obvious place to ask questions, she told me. How do these, what to call them, obstructionists, diehards, true believers, in prosecutors' offices, how do they become so resistant? There are arguably fewer of them because of changes since Randall Adams, but they are still there. And the result was her essay. And I'll get to a little bit of this before we move on to our next subject. This is an opinion piece from the New York Times. The headline is, it's okay to drop charges if you've got the wrong person. It's called doing your job. And it starts this way. It says, in March of 1989, this is by Lisa Belkin, a former reporter for the Times for more than 25 years. She wrote a new book called Genealogy of a Murder. Four generations, three families, one fateful night. In March of 1989, I spent 2 days sitting in a Dallas courthouse among a group of journalists watching justice being blocked. Randall Dale Adams, who had served 12 years for the murder of a police officer, had been granted a new trial by the Texas Court of Criminal Appeals. This was a year after the filmmaker Errol Morris essentially proved that he was innocent, and that another man who essentially confessed to the murder on film in Mr. Morris's documentary, The Thin Blue Line, was guilty. In a damning ruling, the appeals court accepted the findings of a lower court that Dallas County prosecutors had suppressed evidence favorable to Mr. Adams, deceived the court on the whereabouts of a witness, and knowingly used perjured testimony. but prosecutors were still disinclined to let Mr. Adams go. At a bail hearing, they played games for 2 days with the court, demanding the sitting judge be removed from the case, requiring a second judge to fly in from Waco, Texas, only to rule that the first judge could in fact stay. Then the district attorney, John Vance, argued for bail that Mr. Adams could not afford nor probably raise. Quote, "I don't think Randall Dale Adams ought to be out on the street," he said of the man his office had railroaded. Nearly 36 hours after the hearing began, Mr. Adams finally left the building on bail, pending a new trial after his conviction had been overturned. I have kept a photo of the moment across my desk for nearly 35 years. Wearing borrowed clothes as he walked to a waiting car, his hands held out in front of him as if still in handcuffs, Mr. Adams was asked by one of the sea of reporters and photographers how it felt to be back in the world. Quote, "I'm not out of Dallas yet," he said, and he seemed to walk faster. I thought of Mr. Adams often as I kept track of the recent news from Tallahassee, Florida, where the lawyer for Leo Schofield, 57 years old, stood before a room packed with spectators at a parole hearing 2 weeks ago. Many of those spectators vehemently believed him innocent of the 1987 murder of his wife, Michelle. Now imagine that. Your wife is murdered, and as if that isn't trauma enough, tragic enough, they blame him for the murder. And he spends this entire time in jail since the murder in 1987. The thread that connects the two men is the apparent unwillingness of their prosecutors, despite new evidence, to accept even the possibility that the men they convicted were innocent. Like Mr. Adams, Mr. Schofield had spent much of a lifetime, 35 years, trying to regain his freedom. There's a little bit more to this piece. We'll get to it right after the break. This is a short one. Everybody stick around. You're tuned in to The Earl Ingram Show. Welcome back, everybody, to the Earl Ingram Show. I'm Stu Daniels, filling in for Earl today. If you want to join us on the phone, feel free. The phone number is 844-967-2789. Feel free to call in and talk to us about any of these topics we've been discussing today. And I misspoke just before the break when I said guillotines. It was gallows was what I was trying to think of. As I mentioned earlier, Donald Trump has talked about bringing his first term's historic federal killing spree back with group executions, gallows, and firing squads. I think I don't have the statistics right in front of me, but I do believe that during the Trump administration, there were more people put to death than at any time in recent years. I'll see if I can get those facts and figures together before the show is over. But we're talking about the fact that a lot of people have been put away in jail for decades who are now found to be innocent. And from the Innocent Project alone, they have had over 200 people released, what, in the past 30 years or so. But I was, just before the break, I was reading from an opinion piece that appeared in the New York Times, I believe it was posted yesterday, talking about a couple of cases in particular where people have been behind bars for decades for crimes they didn't commit. And Let's see, we were talking about here, saying that the one case involves a man who was committed, who was sentenced for killing his wife back in the late 80s, right? So he's been in jail for 35 years trying to regain his freedom. And as in the other case we were talking about, the Adams case, there was new evidence discovered. They found fingerprints that were not tested for 17 years. And those turned out to belong to a man who has been convicted of murder. And that man has even confessed to the murder that this other gentleman is in jail for. Okay, that man has confessed to Michelle Schofield's murder. As in the Adams case, it took an outsider to bring Mr. Schofield's case attention. The Pulitzer Prize-winning investigative journalist Gilbert King, whose nine-part podcast, Bone Valley, has been downloaded more than 6 million times. Most of all, as in the Adams case, the district attorney's office, this time in Polk County, Florida, spent years fighting Mr. Schofield's release. At a prior parole hearing a few years ago, the state was represented by a former prosecutor who appeared to take the case personally. He said, "We investigated this thing upside down," said Jerry Hill, a retired state attorney, in a Bone Valley interview with Mr. King's co-host, Kelsey Decker, minutes after the board denied parole to Mr. Schofield in 2020. Quote, "Leo Schofield is a cold-blooded murderer, and if I have my way, he'll never get out of prison." So that is, it's hard to believe that this goes on in this day when people can be proved innocent through new technology, DNA testing, etc. It says, the story goes on, or this opinion piece goes on, and says, "And so it went in the Adams and Schofield cases as the prosecutors all but physically barred the jailhouse door. Much has changed in the American judicial system since Randall Dale Adams walked out of that Dallas jail. For some prosecutors, exoneration has become a point of pride, a sign that the prosecutorial machinery is confident enough to review its own work and admit mistakes. Conviction integrity units, also called conviction review units, are particularly robust in some cities, including Detroit and Philadelphia," said Barbara O'Brien, a professor at Michigan State University College of Law. Ms. O'Brien is also editor of the National Registry of Exonerations, which, since its founding in 2012, has reported more than 3,000 exonerations that have taken place since 1989, including more than 230 in 2022 alone. These are people who were behind bars for crimes they didn't commit. Freedoms taken away. This opinion piece from the New York Times goes on and says, "Where prosecutors are not reevaluating their own conviction, a layer of what Ms. O'Brien calls professional exonerators has grown up. Groups like the Innocence Project, law school clinics, and lawyers working on cases pro bono. But there are still prosecutors who won't admit they were wrong. Even in the face of substantial evidence, there is no expression of regret from the prosecutors who convicted Randall Dale Adams in Dallas, nor does one seem likely from the Polk County District Attorney's Office, where any defense of Leo Schofield appears to have been seen by its prosecutors as an attempt to subvert the jury's decision and, by extension, justice." Quote, "It happens less because back a while you would regularly see where it was a small town and the state attorney could be the cousin of the sheriff, and who they decided was guilty," said Herman Lindsay, executive director of Witness to Innocence, which provides assistance to exonerated death row inmates. Mr. Lindsay himself spent 3 years on death row before the Florida Supreme Court concluded the evidence was insufficient to sustain his conviction. He is one of 30 death row inmates in Florida to be exonerated since 1972, according to the Death Penalty Information Center. All right, I'm going to take a bottom of the hour break. Everybody stick around. If you want to get on the phone, feel free, 844-967-2789. You're tuned into the Earl Ingram Show.
Wellpoint Care Network, they can help. Their outpatient clinic staff are both qualified and caring, not to mention highly trained in partnering with you on your healing journey. Make an appointment today at wellpointcare.org. They serve all ages, infants, children, and adults. Both in-person and virtual services are available. Learn more at wellpointcare.org. They serve all ages, infants, children, and adults. Both in-person and virtual services are available.
The boat, baby. All right, welcome back, everybody. You're tuned in to the Earl Ingram Show. I'm Stu Daniels filling in for Earl today. He'll be back on Monday taking a few well-deserved days off. And by the way, if you want to call in, get on the phones with us, feel free. The number is 844-967-2789. And if you want to send me an email message, you can do that. My email address is stumanradio@gmail.com. Stu is spelled S-T-U. And we've been talking about a few different topics today. Most recently, the topic of wrongful convictions, people behind bars for 20 and 30 years at a time who are innocent, not guilty of crimes they were convicted for. And we've been going over this opinion piece from the New York Times by a woman named Lisa Belkin, a former reporter for the Times for more than 25 years and author of a new book called Genealogy of a Murder, Four Generations, Three Families, One Fateful Night. And the reason why this is important today is because, or at least one of the reasons why I'm discussing it right now is because earlier I talked about how Donald Trump is telling people he wants to bring back more executions if he becomes president again, including group executions, gallows, and firing squads. Yeah, here in the United States. That's what I'm talking about. So this piece I've been reading from, an opinion piece by Ms. Belkin, she's been talking about two people in particular that have been wrongly convicted. One gentleman, Mr. Schofield, for murdering his wife back in the late 80s. And we were at the point in this piece where they're saying it's not as bad as it used to be. There are some cities that are doing a really good job now of trying to find people who've been wrongly convicted, but it's not like that everywhere. And these wrong, I'm going to get back to this piece, these wrongful convictions still happen. And not every prosecutor is willing to reconsider a conviction. Quote, while yes, there are more prosecutors willing to be proven wrong, there are still those who show an almost Disney villain level of not budging, Ms. O'Brien said, adding that the Schofield case is beyond the pale, one of the worst I have seen. How to explain this stubborn insistence on guilt, despite what others perceive as proof of innocence, or at least enough evidence to warrant another look? Ms. O'Brien blames the fact that we have an adversarial system rather than an inquisitorial one, meaning that the court does not take part in investigating the facts, but is rather assumed to be an impartial forum in which prosecution and defense present their opposing arguments. It can attract people who see things as very black and white. There's good guys and bad guys, where the goal is the win rather than the truth, she said. In other words, it takes absolute certainty to go to work every day and send people to prison for up to a lifetime. And certainty is tricky to surrender. Allowing for the probability that you were wrong once allows for the possibility that you have been wrong often, and opening that door is often unthinkable. Scott Cupp has seen how prosecutors learn to shut the mental gates against doubt. He was a prosecutor in Florida for 17 years. Quote, I put a lot of folks in prison, he said, adding, but before I did, I made damn sure I was right. Several times during his tenure, he said, he was presented evidence that he had the wrong person and faced reluctance among some of his prosecutors to drop the charges. Quote, but we ended up doing so. It's called doing your job, he said. Then Mr. Cupp became a defense lawyer. In fact, he was Mr. Schofield's lawyer off and on until he was offered a position as a judge on the 20th Judicial Circuit Court in Charlotte County, Florida in 2014. The case haunted him while on the bench, and when he heard Gilbert King speak at an event in Naples, Florida in 2018, he told the reporter to go read the case transcript because his client was not just wrongly convicted, he's an innocent man. In March, Mr. Cupp stepped down from his position on the court to defend Mr. Schofield again, full-time and free. Quote, the system is made up of human beings, and human beings are flawed, he said. In this case, you add a relatively small town where law enforcement and prosecution is a big fish in a little pond. It's ego, pure and simple. It's ego, pure and simple, end quote. When there is progress in such small ponds, therefore, it can be incremental. Hints of such an evolution, however glacial, were visible in the room at the latest Schofield parole hearing, Mr. Cupp said. Parole has been abolished in Florida, one of 16 states to do so. But because that happened after Mr. Schofield was sentenced, he is still entitled to parole. The room was filled with journalists and sympathetic spectators. This time, it was Jacob Orr, an assistant state attorney in the 10th Judicial Circuit, who stood to speak. He had not been involved in the original prosecution. Quote, if we thought that Leo Schofield or any other inmate was innocent, we would take immediate action to right that injustice, he told the New York Times in January. However, the state cannot ignore the overwhelming amount of evidence that has proven Leo Schofield guilty. But at the hearing, he appeared to pivot a bit. While his predecessors had called Mr. Schofield names, handed grisly autopsy photos of his wife to the panel members, and argued he should not be released because he refused to express remorse, Mr. Orr simply asked that, quote, you treat this inmate the same as any other in determining whether to grant parole. And so they did. Longtime prisoners in Florida are routinely required to spend a year or two in a unit designed to prepare them for life in the world. And though the panel denied the request for parole, it did order Mr. Schofield to spend 12 months in a transition program at the Everglades Correctional Institution near Miami. Successful completion of the program is likely to result in his release at his next parole hearing in 1 year. Perhaps then he will be able to live a quiet life as Mr. Adams did after his release. When Mr. Adams died in 2010 at age 61, he had spent a fifth of his life in prison and had come within 3 days of being executed for a crime he did not commit. Mr. Schofield, who has spent two-thirds of his life in prison for a crime another man says he committed, should have been sent to the Lifers program in 2020 when Jerry Hill came and insisted Leo would die in prison instead, Mr. Cupp said. But better now than ever, he added. News reports after the hearing described it as a negative thing, denied parole, and that's factually correct, Mr. Cupp said, but there were positive things that came out of it. The state attorney's office clearly signaled that they were backing off. Finally, So that's an opinion piece from the New York Times discussing the fact that there are many people behind bars for crimes they didn't commit. Obviously, some people have been executed, put to death for crimes they didn't commit. Imagine being on death row for killing your spouse and being an innocent man. You know, you lost your wife, you lost your life, and it's just, it's hard to believe that that still goes on today when we have things like DNA testing. And I think a lot of it goes back to what it was said, what was said in that opinion piece, that it's all about the ego. Once a prosecutor, district attorney, puts somebody away, they're not willing to, oftentimes, they're not willing to say that they made a mistake. We've got 9:43 right now on this Thursday morning. You're tuned in to the Earl Ingram Show. I'm Stu Daniels, filling in for Earl today. And I want to get to a story from the Journal Sentinel. We were talking, you know, about what happens in court when people go before a judge. They've got prosecutors and district attorneys coming after them for crimes they may have committed. Well, here's a story from the Journal Sentinel. Lawmakers vote to increase pay for district attorneys and public defenders in the budget. Maybe that means that we'll get better qualified people as new people come into the system. And this piece from the Journal Sentinel starts out by saying the legislature's powerful budget writing committee voted Tuesday, day before yesterday, to increase the starting wage for district attorneys and public defenders in the upcoming state budget, going farther than what Democratic Governor Tony Evers proposed earlier this year. The plan, if signed by Evers, would bump the minimum pay rate for assistant district attorneys and public defenders by $8.76 per hour, which would be up to $36. Under the plan, experienced district attorneys will also be able to access pay raises with the removal of a maximum cap. Quote, this funding is critical for our communities and for making sure that we have safe and constitutionally protected places to live, work, and raise a family, said Joint Finance Committee co-chair, Representative Mark Bourne, Republican from Beaver Dam. Republican leaders are also proposing to add additional district attorney positions in Sauk and Kenosha counties, as well as converting some part-time positions in Langlade, Oneida, and Ozaukee counties. The rate for private attorneys serving as public defenders would also be raised to $100 an hour, up from $70 an hour. The travel rate for private attorneys would also be raised to $50 an hour. Fond du Lac County District Attorney Eric Toney said during a news conference that the Republican proposal would be, quote, transformational. When we deal with crime, politics must be set aside, and I'm really proud of the work of the legislature based on what this is going to mean for prosecutors across Wisconsin, said Toney, who also serves as the president of the Wisconsin District Attorneys Association. State public defender Kelly Thompson also expressed support for the measures. Quote, being able to recruit and retain the attorneys and staff necessary to ensure the constitutional rights that are protected is a core responsibility of state government, she said. With these resources, we expect to retain some of the most experienced, hardworking attorneys in the state and to recruit for the dozens and dozens of vacant positions, both within the public defender's office and the district attorney's offices. The increases were approved unanimously, with Democrats on the committee joining Republicans in support. Quote, this is an important step for the justice system, said Representative Evan Goyke, Democrat from Milwaukee. It is critical that we fund these positions, end quote. Ahead of the meeting, Evers encouraged the committee to support investments in prosecutors and district attorneys as well. Quote, I urge them to join me in making unprecedented investments in bolstering our justice workforce, including pay increases for a district, for assistant district attorneys, public defenders, and other key positions, he wrote in a tweet. Without providing new resources to recruit and retain qualified and experienced professionals, our justice system will continue to face a constitutional crisis. A tweet from the governor. Going to take a quick break, everybody. Stick around. This is a short one. You're tuned in to the Earl Ingram Show. Oh yeah, now we're getting somewhere. 9:50 on this Thursday morning. Welcome back to the Earl Ingram Show. I'm Stu Daniels, filling in for Earl today. If you want to get in on the phones, feel free. If you have anything to add to what we've been discussing today, the phone number is 844-967-2789. And today, we've been discussing a few topics. We've been talking about people wrongly convicted, wrongly put behind bars. And just before the break, we were discussing how Wisconsin is ready to pay district attorneys and public defenders and prosecutors more money. And I think that's a good thing. You know, we want the best people possible in those positions, especially with what we're finding out about how many people have been wrongly convicted. So if we paid them more money, if we increased the pay, you would think that we would get better people in those positions as new people come in, and we'd be able to retain the best people that we already have in the system. And I was reading from this piece in the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel about increased pay for prosecutors, DAs, and public defenders in the new budget. And this is supported by both Republicans and Democrats. And it says here, Wisconsin is currently struggling to recruit and retain public defenders and district attorneys due to lower pay than surrounding states, creating a shortage of available defense lawyers and prosecutors to handle rising caseloads, according to a recent study from the Wisconsin Policy Forum. According to the report, Wisconsin has 456 full-time district attorneys, deputy district attorneys, and assistant district attorneys, short of the 577 needed to handle the workload within 40-hour work weeks. So we have 456 right now. We need 577. That sounds like a difference of about 121 or so, if I'm doing my math correctly. So we're obviously kind of short. And that shortage is leading to a growing number of backlogged criminal cases. The average age of a case at resolution rose from 152 days in 2013 to 241 days in 2021. The age of misdemeanor cases increased from 89 days in 2013 to 168 days in 2021. The bulk of the increases were between 2019 and 2021. So I'm guessing what that means is that you have been put behind bars for a crime and you can't afford to get out on bail, then you're just stuck in there for those extra number of days. So it's a good thing for those who might be behind bars wrongfully, also that they're going to increase pay, try to get more of the defense lawyers. This piece goes on from the Journal Sentinel and says, in his most recent budget proposal, Evers sought an increase of $24.4 million for the state prosecutor's office and $42.6 million for the office of the state public defender over the next 2 years. That funding could help add positions in both offices. The proposals would increase the minimum hourly pay rates for assistant district attorneys and public defenders to $35, 28.5% increase. Okay, that's minimum hourly pay rate for assistant district attorneys and public defenders, $35. And that's the proposed new wage. And that's a 28% increase. So I think that's a good thing that they're finally putting some money into that system, trying to get some better people and to get the right number of people that we need. All right, let's move on a little bit. We got just a few more minutes before the next break, and I wanted to talk about this article from the New York Times. You know, one thing that we've been talking about this week is the fact that with Republicans, oftentimes the cruelty seems to be the key. You know, that's the point, the cruelty. Since Donald Trump ran for office, you know, the Republicans seem to enjoy calling people names, belittling people, disparaging people, insulting people. It's a fun thing, right? Anyway, now what's going on in Texas? Texas legislature bans transgender medical care for children. This is by David Montgomery and J. David Goodman in the New York Times, reporting from Austin, Texas. Over the opposition of Democrats and the loud protests at the Capitol this month, the Texas legislature voted on Wednesday, yesterday, to approve a bill banning hormone and puberty-blocking treatments, as well as surgeries for transgender children. The state is poised to become the largest state to ban transition medical care for minors. The final version of the bill included a limited exemption for those transgender children who were already receiving medical treatment before the bill's passage, though it also required those patients to wean themselves off the medications over an unspecified period of time. The bill would prohibit a doctor from performing mastectomies or surgeries that would sterilize a child or remove otherwise healthy tissue or body parts, or from prescribing drugs that would induce transient or permanent infertility. It now heads to the governor's desk. The legislation was one of several proposals aimed at regulating the lives of transgender people being considered this year by the Republican-dominated legislature. On Wednesday, the State House voted to advance a measure requiring athletes in public colleges to compete based on the sex inscribed on their birth certificate at the time of their birth. The legislation, known as Senate Bill 14, was among the most volatile measures of the state's every two-year legislative session, drawing protests from transgender Texans and their supporters at the Capitol this month. State police arrested two people amid protests as the bill was being discussed in the Texas House. Opponents in the House twice delayed votes on the bill on procedural grounds before it was ultimately passed and returned to the Senate, where it first passed last month. The Senate voted to concur with the House version and send it to the governor on Wednesday. Even before the legislation passed, Texas officials had taken steps to try to prevent transgender children from accessing medical transition care. Last year, Governor Greg Abbott, a Republican, directed the state's Child Protective Agency to investigate parents for child abuse if their children received such treatment. Everybody stick around. You're tuned in to the Earl Ingram Show.